standing, standing, standing on the promises of God, my Savior, standing, standing, I'm standing on the promises of God, standing on the promises of Christ the Lord, bound to Him eternally by a strong core, overcoming daily with the Spirit's sword, standing on the promises of God, standing, standing, standing on the promises of God, my Savior, standing, standing, I'm standing on the promises of God. Standing on the promises, I cannot fall. Listening every moment to the Spirit's call. Resting in my Savior as my all in all. Standing on the promises of God. Standing, standing. Standing on the promises of God, my Savior. Standing, standing. I'm standing on the promises of God. Amen. All right, standing on the promises of God. We're going to go ahead and continue our lesson in the book of Job. We understand that Job was a man that was considered upright, and God was well pleased with Job. And then the devil, he said to the devil, you know, hey, have you considered my servant Job? And then the devil basically said, well, yeah, because you blessed his hand. He's rich. You got this big family. You know, you touch what he owns, and he'll curse you in your face, man. He will. You take away everything he has. So here, God allowed the devil to go ahead and do that, and he lost everything that he owned, all of his possessions. We guesstimate about $24 million at that time. That was a lot of money. He was considered the richest man in all of Asia. And then the devil basically failed to get him to curse God. And so then when they came together to offer their sacrifices, and God says, hey, look, my servant Job, you said he cursed me, and if I took away everything he had, took all of his possessions, his children, killed all of his children, he still didn't curse God. And then the devil says, yeah, skin for skin. If you touch a man's body, that's a different situation, okay, than just taking his possession. So God says, okay, go after him, but you just do anything to him, you just can't kill him. And so he created, the devil made these boils all over Job from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. The man was miserable. He was in agony, couldn't sleep, couldn't rest. He had nightmares every time he tried to sleep. He was in constant pain and constant sorrow, right, all through his days, and scraping his dead skin off at the fireplace with broken pottery. He was miserable. He cursed the day that he was ever born. His wife says, why be miserable? Why don't you just curse God, die, and get it over with? And they tried to, his wife, at that point, the devil tried to use taking away everything he had, his possessions, his children, to make him break allegiance to God. When that didn't work, he messed up his body, he touched his body, brought sores, open sores all over his body, put him in a lot of pain. He thought he was going to die because of the sores. Then he had friends that came by that were supposed to cheer him up, and they end up falsely accusing him of some secret sin. And so the devil used his wife to try to make him break his allegiance by cursing God and dying. His friends by making him feel bad and making him feel like he had some secret sin and that he was not worthy, that he was evil somehow. and they were wrong. They unjustly judged him. And then after a while, Job started having questions himself. It's like, okay, if I'm worshiping God, and I'm doing everything that God asked me to do, why am I suffering? Okay? God, why are you picking on me? There's so many other people in the world. Why is your radar on me? And he started questioning God. And so this was his mistake. So when we get to verse 38, again, God answers him. So we're down to verse 19. So those who are following in the Bible, we're in chapter 38. That's Job chapter 38, verse 19. And then, so God basically said, you've been asking a lot of questions of me. Let me ask some questions of you. And that was a point we were making, because God is so knowledgeable, so wise. His thoughts are far beyond our thoughts. His knowledge is far beyond our capability of even fathoming, you know, his thought process. He created us. How do we have the audacity to question him? When if he questions us, we won't have an answer for it. So one of those is word in verse 19 starts with where light dwelleth itself. What is light? We looked at last week that God said in the first day, let there be light. But then it wasn't until the fourth day that we see the sun and the moon and being created and the stars. So we're like, okay, if it took that long for the stars and the moon to be created, where was that source of light? Who can explain it? Where did it go? Where does it begin? Where does light begin? You know, and so those are many things. Yes.
Oh, go ahead.
Uh-huh. Okay. Those are many things that we can't understand, we can't explain. So light itself, darkness, as darkness, what is it? And we said last week that darkness is the absence of light. Well, what is light? The absence of darkness. That's all we have. That's all they can explain. Even to this day, your scientists will say, and when you ask them, what is darkness? Oh, it's the absence of light. What is light? Oh, it's the absence of darkness. Is that really explaining what darkness is? Is it explaining what light is? It's not. It doesn't explain it at all. It doesn't explain the source. So God's asking Job, why don't you explain it to me? You're asking me questions, Job. You're asking me all these questions. Let me ask you a question. If you're man enough, go ahead and answer it for me. You know, first of all, were you there when the world was created? Were you there? Can you explain how the world was created? Can you explain the planet itself, the axis of the planet, the equator, all these lines of the earth? Can you explain the sea, the oceans? Why the oceans have they're big, they're contained in a certain area, and there are shorelines that they have. What stops the ocean from just going and flooding the whole earth? What prevents it from doing that? Can you explain that? That's what he was saying. The depths of the ocean. Do you really understand the depths of the ocean? No, we don't today. Why? Because we can't go that deep. There's only so far that man, with our technology, even today, 2020, we don't have the technology to go to the deepest depths of the ocean and the sea. We don't have it. There's even a lake where where we see Nestle, you know, the Loch Ness Monster. There are areas in that lake that are deeper than oceans, and they think that's there's underground caves under the ocean, and that's where these prehistoric animals are able to escape being recognized. I mean, being seen, is because they go deep, deep down where we can't go to. There's life all down there. So once they have technology and subs that can go down deeper and deeper, they're finding all this life down there. And so we have to have super, like I said, super submarines that can withstand millions of pounds of pressure, but you'll have a little microscopic organism, or you'll have a little tiny fish that doesn't have any kind of scales or anything to protect it, but it's living down there. And all that water, with all that pressure, nobody can explain it. Why is the water not crushing down on these little tiny creatures? How are they able to live in such, environments where the oxygen is very little, the sulfur is high? There's so many things. The more we find out, the less we know, basically. The more we discover, the less we actually know. And so in verse 20, It says, should us take it to the bound of it? Let's go ahead and I'm going to read that. Excuse me. Just can't seem to get the mic far enough away from me. Okay. Verse 20 says, that thou shouldest take the bond thereof, and that thou shouldest know the path to the house thereof. So we're talking in verse 20, the boundaries that thou shouldest, the very spot where light commences. Who bounds it? Who keeps it where it is? Where does the light come from? Darkness ends. The house, what houses darkness? So when there's light, where does the darkness go? What houses the darkness? Yeah. I agree. He is the light. But the physical light that we see, we can't explain it. You know, when it disappears, where does it go? Oh, the earth, you know, rotates around the sun, and then when it rotates around the sun, there's light, and then when we go away, then the darkness goes away. So we have our explanations of going around the earth, orbiting around the sun, and that's why. So at certain points of the globe, it's going to hit the sun, and then there's other parts of the globe that are not going to hit the sun. That's where the darkness comes from. But we really don't know. The note in verse 21, he says, were you even born when, or old enough to been there when creation was there? It's almost like, Job, I'm God. You're asking me questions. Let me ask you a question, big boy. When I created this earth, were you there? Did you see it? Were you witness to it? Are you that old to where you could have been there? And of course the answer is no. You know, Job wasn't old enough to have been there to witness the creation of the earth. Man wasn't even formed then. When the earth was created, man wasn't even created yet. So he wasn't there. He couldn't have been there. And then it talks about the treasures of the snow in verse 22. So it says, the places where snow is formed and caused to the, whatever causes it to form at. Have you ever seen snow? Have you seen it snow under a microscope? I mean, it's very delicate. I mean, it's very intricate detail, a snowflake. But what causes a snowflake? I mean, we've got liquid, right? We've got solids. But it becomes a solid, but when it melts, it becomes a liquid. So we know that when it's cold, something happens. But what makes these little artificial snowflakes? Because don't we have things like sleet? Okay, we got sleet. We've got hail, and we've got snow. So what are the things that make them different? Why is the snow like full of flakes, and why does it fall, and why does it have that delicate design? We don't know. And so the more easier count for the formation of snow, we have an easier count than hail. Hail is one of those things that's a mystery. I'll go on to say that it has been stated that both snow and hail owe their formation to electricity. And we understand a lot of times there's electric magnetic fields all over the earth, inside the earth, and then above the earth as well. And that's where we have lightning from. So the hail being formed in the higher regions of the air where the cold is intense. So the colder, the further it is up there, that's where the hail is being produced. And it has more electric magnetic activities there as well. It says, hail is the only meteor, so we're going to call it a meteor of its kind, from which no apparent good is derived. Now, rain, we know that rain is good. You know, what does rain do when it comes down? Okay, exactly. Waters the earth, man. Vegetation, right? We drink it. So it creates life. So rain is the essence of life. We need it. Life-giving is rain. Because if it wasn't for the fact that it rained and your plants were able, your trees were able to get the water they need, then of course we wouldn't have any oxygen. I mean, we need oxygen They take the carbon dioxide, and then the derivative of that is oxygen for us. So rain and dew, both the rain and the dew evaporate, and they give life to the whole vegetable world, you know, the vegetative world. Frost, by expanding the water contained in the earth, pulverizes and renders the soil fertile. Snow covers and defends vegetables from being destroyed by so severe a frost. So frost will destroy vegetation, but snow covers it and protects it. So all these things have their purpose and their reasons for existing. It says, but too severe of a frost, but hail will do none of these things. Hail doesn't do the one, it doesn't have a wonderful purpose like water or dew or frost or snow. It's the only one that does no good at all. And so it says, but often much harm when it comes to hail. So when we think about hail, do we get excited? If we hear there's going to be a hail storm, do we get excited? How many people are like, yay, it's going to hail today? No. I mean, first of all, if you're outside and you're living in the elements, you could get hurt by the hail coming down. If you own anything, a car, house, you get a lot of destruction from hail, right? It's a very destructive thing. And so it says it has no good. It often creates much harm. It is chilling, blasting effect in the spring and summer, and cuts the tender plants so as to acquire a total destruction of them. In short, the treasures of hail are not well known. Even to this day, when men try to research, you know, what are the benefits of hail? They can't really explain it. They can't really explain the good in it. It is used in creation. It has not been ascertained. I mean, its use, that is, in its creation has not been ascertained. But frost is God's universal plow by which it cultivates the whole earth. So we can see things when it comes to frost and dew and snow and rain. But hail is one of those mysteries, right? Now we look at verse 23. Verse 23, we're in Job 38, verse 23. It says, which I have reserved against the time, where it's talking about hell, which I have reserved against the time of trouble, against the day of battle and war. So these are some of the things we look at when it comes to hell being destructive. The season, bound by the frost, hailstones being often employed as weapons of God, right? So instruments of destruction, God's displeasure against his enemies. And so we can go to the book of Exodus, Exodus chapter 9. Okay, Exodus chapter 9. And let's look at verse 23. Exodus 9 and 23. It says, and Moses stretched forth his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and the fire rained along upon the ground, and the Lord rained hail upon the land of Egypt. Very destructive. So there was hail and fire mingled with hail, very grievous, such as there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. And it says in 25, and the hail smote throughout all the land of Egypt. All was in the field. It smote. It killed them, both man and beast. And the hail smote every herb of the field, so it's destroying vegetation. And it break trees of the field, is destroying trees as well. So God used this hail as weapon to destroy the enemies of the children of Israel, right? And which were at that time the Egyptians. So this hail, you know, the mystery of hail, this ice that's just sitting up there that has no purpose, it doesn't help the vegetation. It doesn't help mankind at any point. It's just there as a weapon to be used by God. And we can't explain to this day the benefits, you know, of it to the ecosystem. But it's there. It's created. And then when we see also in Joshua Let's go ahead and turn over to Joshua. Let me see. In the book of Joshua, we'll look at chapter 10 and start with verse 10. It says, "And the Lord discomforted them before Israel and slew them," killed them, "with a great slaughter at Gibeon, and chased them along the way that goeth up to Beth Horon, and smote them at Azekah and unto Makeda. And it came to pass, as they fled from before Israel and were in the going down to Beth Horon, that the Lord cast down great stones from heaven upon them, and unto Azekah, and they died. They were more which died with hailstones than they whom the children of Israel slew with the sword." So here we have the enemies of God, that God used the hail to come down and kill them and slew them. And it killed more people. The hail killed more of the enemies than the sword actually did. All right, now let's continuing in the book of Job. We'll go ahead and go to the in chapter 28 for those who may have just come in. Job chapter 28, we're going to look at verse 24. Verse 38. And we'll look at verse 24. We talked about the hail being used in the day of battle, which 23 says. 24 says, "By what way is the light parted, which scattered the east wind upon the earth?" So light in the sky being scattered, and that's a vision of our lightning, right? Okay, who can ascertain, accurately describe the cause of operation of thunder in the clouds? So this would be Job's mission. All right, you know what thunder is, right? You've seen thunder, you've seen lightning. Hey, Job, why don't you explain to me, how does lightning work? What causes that light in the sky? What causes it to split and all these? Why don't you explain that to me, Joe? I can't explain it. I don't know what happens, right? So it says the operation, so he wants him to tell him the operation of thunder and the clouds. What causes this natural event to happen? The mode of operation of the lightning itself. So how is it parted? How does it take its zigzag form, right? Are all the causes of positive and negative electricity found out? So we know there's positive forces, you know, negative forces of electricity, right? And what are the particles and how do they cohere? What actually creates the lightning? What is it made out of? And how does it cohere to one another in order to make that long line and cause it to zigzag the way it does, right? And scatter the east wind upon the earth, the eastern storm. You know, who can explain the eastern storm? All these mysteries in nature that we know nothing about. 25, who have divided a water course for the overflowing of waters, or a way for the lightning of thunder? Now, 25, it talks about the clouds in general, where the water is stored. So we know we have clouds that hover above us. Water's in the clouds. Okay, so how do they stay up there? Why do they not come down? Wouldn't gravity, the law of gravity, tell the water to come down? But why is it still up there? And what mechanisms have to take place in order for that water to come down, right? And in its certain size, it comes down at a certain, there's misty rain, there's the fat rain, there's the rain that goes sideways. I mean, there's all kinds of different types of rain, right? Misty rain. I mean, I go to Seattle, places like that in England, you know, all that mist coming down. It's just misting. It's like, that's what you call rain? Yeah, that's it. It's raining, you know? But it's misty. Then you have the heavy rain. So what actually happens in the clouds that creates the rain? And then what makes these different types of rain come down? What happens, you know? Can we truly explain it? So we have In 25, it talks about it by evaporation, where the water evaporates, too much moisture is not permitted to lie up on the ground. So if we have too much, if you have a flood and there's water all over the place and it just sits there, the water sits there, it's never good, right? Whatever it's covering is going to die. If it's vegetation, the vegetation is going to die. So water just sitting there is not good. And then it gets contaminated, and then there's all sort of, the mud creates like a cesspool environment of bacteria. Mosquitoes get there, and it's just, it's a mess, you know, muddy mess. It's good for nothing. But there's a system of evaporation that happens, where that water doesn't just sit there, it evaporates and goes back up to the clouds. Who can, please explain to me the mechanism of how that works and what causes that to work. You see what I mean? And so all of this is to say, when we get to our point in time, and I know we get frustrated. We're humans. We get frustrated. And we want to ask God, why? Okay, God, why are you doing it this way? Why? That's, we have to understand, look at these questions that he's asking Job and pretend it's you. And God is asking you these questions. Can you explain them? If God were to put it to you, can you explain all of these mysteries? And then it's like, okay, God created all of this. I know he did, but I'm going to literally look up to him and ask him, why, God? Why are you doing it this way? With my peon brain, okay, that don't have the capacity to understand any of this. I wasn't there when he created it, and even if I was, I wouldn't understand how he did it. He spoke and there it was. Okay, explain that. Explain scientifically how God can speak and these things manifest. From nothing becomes something. It talks about that the world was created by things that are not seen. What does that mean? Microscopic organisms, microscopic particles, right? Matter, atoms coming together, you know. And so these things that we can't see, we know they exist, and but yet we can't see them. And he speaks it, and there it is. I can't explain it, but yet I'm going to question him. It's like me questioning a scientist. You know, this guy has a PhD degree. He teaches at Harvard. He's a scientist. And he goes in, he starts mixing these chemicals, and I go up there, wait, why are you mixing that one, that yellow one with the green one? That's stupid. Yellow and blue makes green, you know. Why don't you use that pink one over there? And I'm ignorant. I don't know what chemical components are in the pink one or in the green one. I don't know what he's doing. He knows, right? He has a knowledge. He has a PhD degree in chemistry. But I have a PhD in nothing, okay? But I'm going to question him. So we wouldn't question people that have authority like that, right? That have knowledge over us. But yet we would, the person, they can't even explain. Scientists can't explain these things. PhDs can't explain this, what God has done. And we have the audacity to question God. And so that's where we have to be careful. That was Job's sin, okay, in a sense. That was where he was wrong. I won't say sin. Let's just say that's where he was wrong. Okay, that's where he was wrong. He did follow God. He was a man of God. He was upright. But when it came to what did Job do wrong, that was it. He questioned God. And we have to be careful of that as well. Okay, so the too much moisture is not permitted to lie up on the ground, which would not only be injurious to vegetation, but even destroy the vegetation, like I said before. And then it talks about the way of the lightning of thunder, the path of the bolt of thunder. Okay, you see thunder, lightning, you know, and then the thunder comes after it. Well, what creates the thunder? Where is that thunder? That lightning, the path of lightning, where it goes. What creates that path? Why does the lightning go that way? And then this time it goes that way. What's creating the different pathways of the lightning? We don't understand, right? 26. Verse 26 says, to cause it to rain, the way of lightning and thunder, to cause it to rain on the earth where no man is, on the wilderness wherein there is no man. That one to me, verse 26, is very important. So we have all these things that we see, we can look at and say, okay, we have sun because the sunshine helps things to grow, you know, and we need certain vitamins and minerals from the sun. You know, we get certain vitamins from the sun. All these things, sun is necessary, rain is necessary, all these things are necessary for mankind, for us to exist. But wonder when you, in a part of the world where there is no man, it's just wilderness, and all these things are going on. So why did God provide for these desolate areas? There's no man. But all this stuff is still going on. And so in 26, it basically talks about the lightning and causes the rain on the earth. So let me look at verse 26, and where there's no man in the wilderness. So the lightning is represented as coming immediately from the hand of God. The clap is the effect of the lightning, which causes a vacuum in the part of an atmosphere through which it passes. The air rushes to restore the equilibrium, may cause much of the noise that is heard in the clap. So that is a theory of what we get that thunder from. But let's go to thunder causing rain. How does it the thunder cause rain? So let's look at just that simple thing. We see it rain, you know, we hear thunder and lightning, we see it rain. Okay, it's the clouds in the sky, thunder, or it's about to rain, it starts raining. We don't think much about it. How does the thunder cause rain? The most accurate and incontestable experiment, it is proved that the water is a composition of two elastic airs of gas, as they are called, oxygen and hydrogen. In 100 parts of water, there are 88 and a fourth of oxygen and 11 three-fourths of hydrogen. Pass a succession of electric sparks through water by means of a proper apparatus, and the two gases are produced in the proportion mentioned above. To decompose water by galvanizing, take a narrow glass tube, 3 or 4 inches long, fit each of the corks penetrated with a piece of slender iron wire, and fill the tube with water. Let the ends of the two wires within the tube be distant from each other about 3/4 of an inch, and let one be made to communicate with the top, the other with the bottom, of a galvanic pile in action. On making this communication, bubbles of air will be formed and ascend to the top of the tube. The water decreases as it is composed. The oxygen and hydrogen formed by this experiment may be recomposed in the same weight of the water. Take any quantity of the oxygen and hydrogen gas in the proportion already mentioned, ignite them by the electric spark, and they produce a quantity of water equal in the weight to the gas employed. Everybody follow me, follow along? Thus, then we can convert water into air and convert the air into water. And the proportions hold as above. I have repeatedly seen it done and assisted in doing it, but cannot in this place describe everything in detail. So even the scientist that's doing an experiment can't explain every single part of the experiment in detail. Now, to the purpose of this note, the rain descending after the flash and the peal, the electric spark of or matter of lightning passes through the atmosphere, ignites, and decomposes the oxygen and hydrogen, which explode. And the water which formed of these two falls down from the fall down in the form of rain. The explosion of gases, as well as the rushing in of the circumambient air to restore the equilibrium, will account for the clap and peal, that thunder that we hear, as decomposition and ignition of them will account for the water rain, which is the attendant of a thunderstorm. Thus, by the lightning of thunder, God causes it to rain on the earth. How marvelous and instructive are his ways. Isn't that wonderful? Now, that's just rain. Okay? So can you imagine everything that exists, and we were to go into the details of how now it snows. So now we got to do scientifically how snow becomes snow, how sleet becomes sleet, how frost becomes frost, how hell becomes hell, all of these things. Can you? And we don't know the answer to these things. We can see them happening, but we can't explain it. And again, Job couldn't explain it either. Verse 27. It says, to satisfy the desolate and waste ground and to cause the bud of the tender herb to spring forth. So the thunder cloud not only explodes over inhabited countries where mankind is, that the air may be purified. So when we see, you know how whenever there's, and a lot of people like myself are very attracted to thunderstorms. You know how clean and crisp the air is. You can breathe it in. It seems so clean after a thunderstorm. It's clean in the air. God is actually cleaning the air. He's purifying the air. The air may be purified and the rain sent down to fertilize the earth. So the lightning is purifying the air. The water is fertilizing the ground. But it is conducted over deserts where there is no human inhabitants. And this to cause the bud and the tender herbs. So you can think, okay, all these herbs are here. We have vegetation. There's no man to eat them. But God is still doing it, even in these desolate places where there is no existence of mankind. It still springs forth. So it's like, okay, God, explain that. Why are you doing that over here in these desolate areas where there is no life? Even animal life. It's still going on, you know? Because we understand there's a purpose for it. Alrighty then. Looks like you may want to take that outside there. Kelly? Brother Kelly. We had to get her, escort her out because I don't think she's doing this coughing over her, but she seems to be sick. Okay. Again, of course, we have to, with the coronavirus, you know, going on, we have to be very careful. And there's things that we can no longer accept. Again, we were talking about shaking hands, you know, we're not going to shake hands, we're not going to hug and kiss each other, we'll greet each other. But until we get a hand over this coronavirus, we're going to have to really be careful. And if you're coughing, you know, you need to cover up. And if you're sick, you really don't need to be here at work or anywhere where there's a lot of people. So, you know, we really need to get her to a place where she can get her coughing under control. Okay. 28. Hath the rain a father, or who hath begotten the drops of dew? Who tells the rain what to do, right? Who is the father of rain? The small drops, globulars, dense, moist, vapor found on the earth. We talked about that in spring and summer and morning. So there's different types of drops, depending on what season it is. And various experiments have been instituted to ascertain whether dew arises from the earth or descends from the atmosphere. That was like, you wake up and there's dew everywhere. Where did it come from? Did it come from the moisture that was already on the ground? Did it come from the moisture above? Where did that dew come from? You know, there's still theories. So if it's theories, that means no one can say for sure where the dew comes from. You just wake up and there it is, right? But where did it come from? From the water above and the water below. Out of whose womb came the ice and the hoary frost of heavens? Who had gendered it. So, hoar frost is a dew and a frosty morning on the grass. We see that. And again, we don't understand the different compositions, different designs, the whole bit. And in 30 it says the waters are hid as a stone. So we know about the freezing here's a reference to freezing in the winter. And then in some intense frost, the ice becomes as hard as a stone. And we saw that being used as weapons by God, you know, the hail. And then it goes on in 31. I think we probably are out of time. I'll stop at 31. In 31, it says, canst thou bind the sweet influence of Pleiades and loose the bands of Orion? So Pleiades, a cluster of six stars in Taurus constellation. So we've got a cluster of six stars in Taurus, the Taurus constellation, and we look up and we see all these stars and we see them in the constellations. Why do they exist? How is it that man can tell the seasons? How do we have these astrological, you know, figures and things of that nature? And you can see them in that order. Why do they look the way they look? Why are they placed in the heavens the way they're placed? And why is it that, depending on whether it's January, February, March, April, or May, you see these constellations in different forms, right? And so we can see it, Orion, a constellation on the equator, east of Taurus. All of these things that people are able to be able to tell the seasons by these stars and constellations. How did that exist? And it continues, just like seasons, just like summer or winter, you know. And we see these things in the constellation as well. All right, we're going to stop right there, and then next week we'll look at 32. Do we have any questions in regards to our lesson this morning on my far right-hand side? Any questions or comment? Okay, and in the middle section, any questions or comment? All right, to my left-hand side, any questions or comment? Okay, so in conclusion, basically, we understand what a magnificent God that we serve. And even with the scientific advancements, even artificial intelligence, all of the mechanisms that we have as far as computing mechanisms to try to figure out life, and where things came from, CERN, all of these, we still have questions. We still don't know it all, right? We're still always forever searching, regardless of how smart, you know, how many Albert Einsteins we have. All right. May God add a blessing to the study of the book of Job and the hearing of his word. May God bless you all. Yeah.